ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
From an Ipswich fish and chip shop to the epicentre of Australian politics.
Please explain.
Pauline Hanson is Nation's Maybe Rise. It's One Nation.
This is the unlikely story of One Nation.
Well, I'm back.
Is it a passing protest vote or a permanent realignment of Australian politics?
Whether you love her or hate her, truth is stranger than fiction.
The Making of One Nation. To hear the full series, search for The Making of One Nation on ABC Listen.
If you go somewhere dark and stare at the night sky for long enough, you're bound to see a shooting star as a rock from outer space fizzes into our atmosphere at high speed. Increasingly, you're also likely to spot a satellite, either cruising overhead in its orbit and reflecting some sunlight, or burning up at the end of its life. When you see that, instead of making a wish, you might want to take a moment to think about what all these bits of burning junk are doing to our atmosphere. This is Lab Notes from ABC Radio National. I'm Jonathan Webb, and today I'm speaking with Associate Professor Alice Gorman, who's also known as Dr. Space Junk, from Flinders University. Hi, Alice.
Hi, Jonathan.
Now, let's start with the scale of the problem. How many satellites are currently orbiting Earth, and how fast is that number going up?
We have approximately 15,000 working satellites in Earth orbit. So that's not counting the satellites that are junk. The majority of those have been launched in the last 5 years.
Yeah, it's been a huge increase, hasn't it, with these mega constellations, networks of hundreds or thousands of satellites like the SpaceX internet company Starlink, which has more than 10,000 satellites already and plans for many more. Compare that to GPS, which runs on like 30. Do we know how often these things are falling out of the sky now?
Well, we do actually know that, and I think it's quite an alarming number as well. On average, one Starlink satellite every day.
Yeah, I mean, if that's an average, then some days you'd get two or three. That's a lot of metal burning up in the atmosphere. What are the consequences?
So generally, aluminium is one of the biggest components of spacecraft.
Yeah, like 30 or 40 kilograms in a single Starlink satellite or something?
Yeah. So when it burns at those super high temperatures, it forms alumina. And the thing about the alumina is it sets off this reaction that ends up with the chlorine floating around free in the upper atmosphere, breaking down the ozone. But the alumina stays intact, so it can continue to cause that damage for a long time. The ozone protects us from a number of different kinds of ultraviolet radiation from the sun. So if we're not protected from that, there are health implications for humans. There are implications for ecologies and environments. There are implications for food production. Mm. We're starting to see a sort of more global impact on the ozone, to the degree where some people have suggested we need a new kind of Montreal Protocol to put a halt or at least slow down the rate at which we're getting burning space junk in the atmospheres. And there's a balance here. So everyone's been very concerned about the amount of space junk in Earth orbit, but the way people try and control space junk is to get it to fall back down, to tip it back into the atmosphere with the assumption that removes it from orbit and so reduces the collision risk.
I was going to ask, what could we do about it? Because mostly people talk about space junk as sort of a traffic problem, right? Or a, you know, crash and debris problem for other satellites. And like you say, the solution is deorbiting. Are there any practical solutions for this burn-up problem? Where else can we send them? It would take a lot of energy to fling them into space, I'm guessing.
Yeah, pushing satellites to higher orbits where they're less likely to re-enter quickly, or to less congested orbits, it takes money, other satellites and efforts too. There's a few other things to be done. So we've become very reliant on satellites from space giving us navigation, timing, internet, but it doesn't have to come from space. A lot of these things are also provided by terrestrial infrastructure. Mm-hmm. A lot of places, they haven't invested in that or invested in maintaining it or upgrading it. And if that were done for remote places or places we think of as remote but actually aren't really remote, we'll remove some of the reliance on stuff from space. One other aspect to this is the duplication of services. You know, we have, in terms of navigation satellites, there's GPS, the US network, GLONASS, the Russian network, Galileo, the European network, and Chinese Beidou network. The mega constellations are a little bit the same. They're duplicating services, but it's that competition.
Mm.
And there is an element, Jonathan, and particularly with people like Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk, there's a competitiveness which I would argue relates more to identity than it does to need or regard for the environment.
What regulations are in place already and what could we do further? I mean, they need approval to send these satellites up in the first place at the moment. Is that right?
That's right. So approval is given by the country from which they're launched. So the Outer Space Treaty of 1967 makes national governments responsible for the actions of any space activities that fall under their governance. So this means SpaceX. I mean, they're multinational corporations too, but the US is responsible. So they license the launch and they license the satellites. And Australia does the same. We have our own laws around this. So for the first Starlink mega constellation, approval was given under the ACMA Act. Something that can be done is for nations to refuse to permit the use of Starlink or other mega constellation satellites. At the moment, Starlink and the other mega constellations, to be efficient, they have this built-in redundancy. So some satellite constellations in the old days, you lose one of them and you've got a serious problem. With the mega constellations, you can lose multiple satellites without affecting the capacity for them to deliver the services. So that's good in terms of reliability, but clearly bad in terms of what's entering the atmosphere.
Yeah. So are there any people looking at making those regulations stiffer with the atmosphere in mind as something that needs protecting?
There are researchers who are making the case that this cannot be allowed to continue because the actions of a few companies are causing potentially global harm. But at the moment, it's being dealt with kind of nation by nation because each nation has to do that licensing and permitting. There are people who are working on identifying the scale of the problem and making the case that while international cooperation on reducing space junk is critical, international cooperation on reducing the harms to the ozone layer is also critical.
Could we make the satellites out of something else?
People are looking at making satellites out of materials that decay very quickly. If you can put something up, it does its job quickly and then deorbits, then it's doing the thing it's meant to do. If it's made out of a material like wood, for example.
I was going to say, balsa wood satellites.
Seriously. So Japan has been testing wooden satellites.
Wow.
So they don't last long, but they don't necessarily have to last long if there's a swarm of them, if there's a mega constellation of them. They will burn up. There may be a bit of soot, but there won't be that alumina. But it does mean you need a lot of them and they need to go up, do their job, come back quickly. So we're still talking mega constellations. At the other end of the spectrum, you make a satellite that's really robust and long-lived.
All right.
So that means finding new materials, new ways of shielding the satellite from impacts, from radiation, from plasma arcing. There's a whole bunch of stuff. So you make them super durable so that they will stay up there for a long time, not create more junk on their own, and do their job. So that's kind of the opposite end to those quick and dirty ones that burn up. Refueling spacecraft is the other technology.
Hard to imagine refueling a mega constellation, though. That's a lot of petrol bowsers.
And, you know, the longer term vision is that there will actually be refueling stations in space.
Oh, my goodness.
Closer to home, there's an Australian company, actually, Neumann Space, that is looking in how you use the aluminium in satellites as fuel for plasma thrusters.
Wow.
It's both recycling a resource that's already there and providing fuel for a next generation of satellites.
Like a recycling plant in orbit to scoop them up before they burn up and make use of them.
Yes, yes.
Amazing.
A lot of potential there, I think.
It's nice to know that there are potential solutions and to have some hope, Alice. Thank you so much for sharing your lab notes with me.
A pleasure, Jonathan.
Associate Professor Alice Gorman is a space archaeologist at Flinders University. This episode of Lab Notes was made on Gadigal and Ngunnawal and Ngambri country, produced by Amy Briggs, and I'm Jonathan Webb. I'll catch you next week.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.